Hi. Oh, my God. We're here. Let's see. The printer goes to hell. The video stream starts to do something I don't want it to do because I'm not video streaming right now. Okay. The music. I'm playing some music for you tonight. If you're listening online to the stream, you will hear a CD by a group called Primetime Heroes. Primetime Heroes. And they have a website that we're going to put up a link to at MikeMalloy.com. But check it out tonight. Just listen to it a little bit. Okay, what the hell is going on here? Come on, Mike, you got a program to do. Are we on? Sure we are. Okay, where are we? Oh, yeah, this hour is sponsored by Daryl. Daryl, who writes, "Don't let the teabagging toe-tappers get you down. Instead, cheer yourself up by reading Sticks and Bones online at sticksandbones.com. And it's spelled S-T-I-X. I haven't been there, so I hope it's not pornography. I've been fooled like that before, you know. But anyway, thanks. Daryl Tolan is our first hour sponsor here. Thank you, Daryl. I appreciate it very much. I don't know if we're going to have... Okay, let's see what happens. Let's see what happens now. Ah! I hate this. But I really shouldn't complain. We have not had tornadoes here, and there are a lot of people suffering tonight. I'll tell you, somebody who's not suffering are the Gingriches. I've just got to spend a little time on this. I really do. Open up the New York Times this morning. Trudge up to the top of the driveway. Stand there, get the paper, wait for the dog to pee. Takes a dog forever just to take a normal dog leak. So I'm standing there and open up the New York Times, and there's a picture of Calista Gingrich, a profile with the sprayed on hair and the off the shoulder black dress and a diamond necklace. And the article is "All That Glitters May Redefine," run by Gingrich. Well, yeah, it just may. I hate these right wingers who try to make themselves sound like they're populist. They are of the people. Oh, hog snot. There's not a Republican out there who is of the people. Anyway, as the Times pointed out, you remember John McCain's inability to remember how many homes he had or still has, right? Remember? John Edwards' $400 haircut. And now there's Newt Gingrich's $500,000 revolving line of credit at Tiffany & Company, interest-free. And the way Gingrich sees it, he was on Face the Nation on Sunday. He said he's just a guy running for president who pays all of his bills and lives within his budget and who is, in fact, very frugal. Uh-huh. And as the Times said this morning, that's not the way some voters out in the rest of America might see it. He's a guy that paid more for jewelry than some people pay for their houses. Some people? Some people? $500,000? Some people? Come on, New York Times. Come down to the level of us average folks out here. Most people don't pay that much. Politico broke the news that while working for the House Agriculture Committee, Calista filed forms for 2005 and 2006 disclosing her husband's revolving charge of a quarter to $500,000 with Tiffany. Mr. Gingrich, insisting his jewelry buying habits are his own business. Oh, really? And a woman's right to privacy. Whose business is that, you rat bastard? Huh? And the fact that gay folk may want to get married. Whose business is that, Newt? I digress. But the glittering strands of diamonds that Mrs. Gingrich wore last month to the Washington premiere of the couple's latest documentary movie looks strikingly like one that Tiffany advertises for $45,000. And over at Time Magazine's website yesterday, there was a slideshow of Calista wearing various baubles that, obviously, in my opinion, were straight out of the Tiffany catalog, including what looks like a $22,000 pair of diamond and gold Starbust earrings, which, according to the website, were inspired by electrons orbiting in the nucleus of an atom. Oh, my God. Well, sure. I mean, rich folks do that. The Tiffany story is sticking to Gingrich, helping to redefine this thug, this punk, this pseudo-intellectual. As House Speaker, as the Times points out, Gingrich preached the virtues of fiscal conservatism. Now he's struggling to explain how spending large sums of jewelry fits in with that philosophy. And while a spokesman for Tiffany confirmed yesterday that Gingrich had paid the debt in full, with no interest. This is hardly what his campaign needs at a time when many Americans are out of work and lost their homes and can't afford to send their kids to school and losing their health insurance because they can't make payments. And this rancid son of a bitch wants to drape his wife in all this luxury. Right? The Gingrich campaign, the Times says, had hoped that after 11 years of marriage, he could present himself as a stable family man. Newt Gingrich? But now, what did Stephen Colbert say the other night? He said $500,000 at Tiffany's? There's a simple explanation. The guy clearly buys his engagement rings in bulk. But in Iowa, the Iowa Republican, a political website, ran a scathing commentary titled, "How a Fiscal Conservative Spends Half a Million at Tiffany's." The site's editor, Craig Robinson, former political director for the state Republican Party, said the essay was submitted by a political activist who was, quote, completely turned off, end quote, by the expenditures. Mr. Robinson said, quote, "It's bizarre. I don't think he's ever going to live it down." This is Republican, remember. "There aren't many $500,000 homes in Iowa, so we can't even fathom a $500,000 credit card debt." Gingrich on CBS's Face the Nation said the credit line is a standard, no-interest account. What? Standard? Standard to whom? Well, to Newt. Now, stick with me on this, because there's a follow-up that you may find interesting. Gingrich, of course, is hardly the first politician to become a sudden symbol of spending excesses. Sarah Palin, remember her, presented herself to voters as an ordinary hockey mom. And then it was discovered that she had spent $150,000 on designer clothes, among other things. New book out about her. Oh, my. Gingrich, who has grown wealthy in recent years by publishing books, making movies, and delivering speeches, says it is not recklessness to spend this kind of money at all, this kind of money. He said on Face the Nation that he owes no money except for his mortgage payments on one rental property in Wisconsin, his wife's home state. Bam-bidi-bam-bidi-bam. But out in Iowa, buying jewelry on credit somehow feels different from buying a refrigerator or a new washing machine. And Rich Galen, a former Newt Gingrich press aide, agrees. Galen said, quote, "It's not something that normal people do. I understand he's made a lot of money. He's done very well, and God bless him for it. But that's sort of a departure from the Newt Gingrich that I knew." Really? Departure for you, Rich? Huh? Not for us here in Georgia. We'll be right back with the second part of this story.
Yours. A kiss on the hand may be quite continental, but diamonds are a girl's best friend. A kiss may be grand, but it won't pay the rental on your humble flat or help you at the automat.
Unfiltered, only with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. If you're listening online and you hear this band, I just got to put this in here because I really like them. Primetime Heroes. They have a website. You can check them out. PrimetimeHeroes.com. PrimetimeHeroes.com. Good band. I like it. If you're listening online, you'll hear we're going to play their music most of the night tonight. So tell your friends. And eventually we get a link up at our website. Okay, Calista Gingrich and Newt. But there's that picture in the New York Times front page this morning. Woo! I swear to God, that is, that's got to be some of that plasterboard from China that her hair is made of. I've never seen hair like that in the natural world. I just haven't. I'm sorry, Calista. I don't mean to be, you know, make an odd womanim attack here, but Jesus God, can't you? I mean, the color of her hair, you don't find that in the natural world either, but I guess it pleases Newt, as does draping his wife in hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of jewelry. Okay. Now, Jeff Stein at Spy Talk Blog. Do, 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 do. As the following, at the same time Tiffy & Company was extending Calista Bicek Gingrich a virtual interest-free loan of tens of thousands of dollars, the diamond and silverware firm Tiffany was spending big bucks to influence mining policy in Congress and in agencies over which the House Agriculture Committee, where she worked, had jurisdiction, according to official records. Filings by Tiffany's lobbyist, yes, they have one, Cassidy and Company, and other government records show that the firm's, Tiffany's, spending on, quote, mining law and mine permitting related issues, end quote, in Congress, as well as the Forest Service, the Interior Department, and Interior's Bureau of Land Management shot up sharply between or during the period when Calista Gingrich was chief clerk at the House Agriculture Committee. Oh, no! Really? Tiffany's annual lobbying expenditures rose from about $100,000 to $360,000 between 2005 and 2009, according to records assembled by the Center for Responsive Politics, a government watchdog organization. The Forest Service, which comes under the committee's jurisdiction, oversees mining, including silver mining in federal forests. Silver, of course, is ding, 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 a big part of Tiffany & Company's business. Gingrich's campaign website makes no specific mention of mining in its description of his wife's duties. The website says, in part, quote, during her tenure, the Agriculture Committee held hearings on a wide range of issues, including biotechnology, bioterrorism, conservation, forest management, nutrition, rural development, trade, and welfare reform, end quote. According to her filings, Calista Gingrich listed debts to Tiffany between $250,000 on a, quote, revolving charge account, end quote, during 2005, 2006. After she left in 2007, she was no longer required to report her finances. The Washington Post's Glenn Kessler wrote that he was puzzled by Newt Gingrich's claim that he had a standard no-interest account at Tiffany & Company. The Washington Post's Glenn Kessler asked, would Tiffany really charge no interest for that period of time on that amount of money? Really? Tiffany's standard credit card application, Kessler noted, the Washington Post writer, states that customers pay 21% interest on unpaid bills. If Newt and Calista paid no interest on just a $250,000 balance, it would amount to an interest-free loan of $50,000. Plus, they have the bling! Kessler, The Washington Post writer goes on, quote, Gingrich's claim that he had a standard no interest account as part of the normal way of doing business appears highly dubious. Tiffany does not appear to provide such a revolving line of credit account to regular customers, and Calista Gingrich's disclosure documents clearly show the debt was carried for at least 2 years. Gingrich refused further questions, or referred further questions to Tiffany & Company. Tiffany & Company has said, no, we're not talking. Kessler wrote at the Washington Post, the fact that Tiffany won't say a word after Gingrich said, go talk to them, certainly raises questions. He quoted John Olsheimer, president of consumer education at smartcredit.com, as saying that, quote, carrying a balance of up to $500,000 and not paying interest is anything but normal. But Tiffany's isn't your normal retailer, of course, and upscale retailers are notorious for cutting special deals with VIPs like entertainers, athletes, and political figures. Entertainers and athletes, we understand, they flaunt the bling. But politicians? What does Tiffany get from them in return? Good question.
Coast to Coast, The Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
Look at them yo-yos, that's the way you do it.
Yo-yos.
Play the guitar on MTV.
This hour is sponsored by Daryl Tolan, whose message, don't let the teabag and toe tappers get you down. Instead, cheer yourself up by reading Sticks and Bones online at sticksandbones.com. S-T-I-X, sticksandbones.com. Check it out. Thanks, Daryl. So the fact that Calista Bisek Gingrich was working as what? She was the chief clerk at the House Agriculture Committee, and the Agriculture Committee oversees things like silver mining. At the very time when she was granted, her husband was granted a revolving charge with a limit up to $500,000 and no interest. And, oh, well, see how something like this can really trip up one of these right-wing dogs? I'm not talking about her. I'm talking about Newt. See how easy it is? And they don't give a goddamn. I mean, it just means nothing to them. Walking around with hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of jewelry draped around his wife, that means nothing to Newt. Newt is, you know, got that little snarky look to his face all the time. Constantly has that little snark look, doesn't he? Huh? Hi, I'm Newt Gingrich and you're not. Evil bastard. Well, Newt, good luck. You've had an albatross hung around your neck. Let's see you wiggle out of it. Ray Abelia, a Jewish-American activist of Israeli descent who's active with the peace group Code Pink. I think I met her at the demonstration in D.C. Disrupted Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's congressional address yesterday. Standing in the gallery, Ray Abelia unfurled a banner reading, "Occupying land is indefensible." Before shouting, no more occupation, stop Israel war crimes, equal rights for Palestinians, occupation is indefensible. Seconds earlier, Mr. Netanyahu talked about the youth around the world rising up for democratic principles. According to Democracy Now, Amy Goodman's site, As Abelia rose up, members of the audience tackled her to the ground, while people in the hall, Americans, cheered, drowning her out. She was escorted out of the chamber by security forces and taken to George Washington University Hospital, where she was treated for neck and shoulder injuries. While at the hospital, police arrested her and charged her with disorderly conduct for disrupting Congress. In addition to her work with Code Pink, Ray Abelia works with Move Over AIPAC, a group that held a conference this weekend in Washington, D.C., coinciding with AIPAC's own annual convention. On her disruption of Congress, Abelia said this morning, quote, "I spoke the truth about what's going on in Israel, the war crimes and occupation, oppression and inequality that Palestinians are suffering from must end, and I was absolutely it was absolutely despicable to see our Congress pandering to Netanyahu." She went on, "And after I spoke out, Netanyahu said, 'This is what's possible in a democracy, and you wouldn't be able to get away with this in other countries.' And I think that is ridiculous and absurd. If this is what democracy looks like, that when you speak out for freedom and justice, you get tackled to the ground, you get physically violated and assaulted, and then you get hauled off to jail? That's not the kind of democracy that I think I want to live in." End quote. Oh, and I caught my share of condescending, patronizing, smarmy emails. This time, no, "You're a filthy GD Jew hater." No, I didn't get any of that. But I got a couple of emails I'm going to share with you a little bit later. Uri Avnery, who is a longtime Israeli peace activist. Since 1948, he's advocated the setting up of a Palestinian state alongside Israel. 1974, Uri Avnery was the first Israeli to establish contact with the PLO leadership. And on and on and on. This guy must be in his 80s. He writes, "There they were, the members of the highest legislative bodies of the world's only superpower, flying up and down like so many yo-yos, applauding wildly every few minutes or seconds the most outrageous lies and distortions of Benjamin Netanyahu. It was worse than the Syrian parliament during a speech by Bashar Assad, where anyone not applauding could find himself in prison, or Stalin's Supreme Soviet, when showing less than sufficient respect could have meant death. What the American senators and members of Congress feared was a fate worse than death. Anyone remaining seated or not applauding wildly enough could have been caught on camera. And that amounts to political suicide. It was enough for one single congressman to rise and applaud, and all the others had to follow suit. Who would dare not to? The sight of these hundreds of parliamentarians jumping up and clapping their hands again and again and again and again and again, with the leader graciously acknowledging the applause with a movement of his hand, was reminiscent of other regimes, only this time it was not the local dictator who compelled this adulation, but a foreign one. The most depressing part of it was that there was not a single lawmaker, Republican or Democrat, who dared to resist. When I was a 9-year-old boy in Germany, I dared to leave my right arm hanging by my side when all my schoolmates raised theirs in the Nazi salute and sang Hitler's anthem. Is there no one in Washington, D.C. who has that simple courage? Is it really Washington, I-O-T, Israel occupied territory, as the anti-Semites assert? Many years ago, I visited the Senate and was introduced to the leading senators of the time. I was profoundly shocked after being brought up in deep respect for the Senate of the United States, the country of Jefferson and Lincoln. I was faced with a bunch of pompous asses, many of them nincompoops who had not the slightest idea what they were talking about. I was told that it was their assistants who really understood matters. So what did the great man Netanyahu say to this august body? It was a finely crafted speech using all the standard tricks of the trade, the dramatic pauses, the raised finger, the little witticisms, the sentences repeated for effect. Not a great orator by any means, no Winston Churchill, but good enough for this audience and this occasion. But the message could be summed up in one word. No. After their disastrous debacle in 1967, the leaders of the Arab world met in Khartoum and adopted the famous three no's. No recognition of Israel, no negotiation with Israel, no peace with Israel. It was just what the Israeli leadership wanted. They could go happily about their business of entrenching the occupation and building settlements. Now Netanyahu is having his Khartoum. No return to the 67 borders, no Palestinian capital in East Jerusalem, no to even a symbolic return of some refugees, no military withdrawal from the Jordan River, meaning that the future Palestinian state would be completely surrounded by the Israeli armed forces, no negotiation with the Palestinian government supported by Hamas, even if there are no Hamas members in the government itself, and so on. No, no, no. The aim is clearly to make sure that no Palestinian leader could ever dream of entering negotiations, even in the unlikely event that he were ready to meet yet another condition, to recognize Israel as the nation-state of the Jewish people, which includes the dozens of Jewish senators and congressmen who are the first to jump up and down, up and down, up and down, like so many marionettes. Netanyahu, along with his associates and political bedfellows, is determined to prevent the establishment of a Palestinian state by all and any means. That did not start with the present government. It is an aim deeply embedded in Zionist ideology and practice. The founders of the movement set the course. David Ben-Gurion acted to implement it in 1948 in collusion with King Abdullah of Jordan. Netanyahu, he's just adding his bit. No Palestinian state means no peace, not now, not ever. Everything else is, as the Americans say, baloney. All the pious phrases about happiness for our children, prosperity for the Palestinians, peace with the entire Arab world, a bright future for all, are just that, pure baloney. At least some in the audience must have noticed that. Even with all that jumping up and down.
With their fingers crossed, everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guys lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor and the rich get rich. That's how it goes. Everybody knows. Everybody knows the boat is leaking.
Was sponsored by Daryl Tolan. He's got a message. Don't let the teabag and toe tappers get you down. Instead, cheer yourself up by reading Sticks and Bones online at sticksandbones.com. Sticks is spelled S-T-I-X. Sticksandbones.com. Thanks, Daryl. Back to Uri Avnery, longtime Israeli peace activist. Since 1948, he has advocated the setting up of a Palestinian state alongside Israel. In 1974, Uri Avnery was the first Israeli to establish contact with the PLO leadership. In 82, first Israeli ever to meet Yasser Arafat after crossing the lines in besieged Beirut. He served three terms in the Israeli parliament. He is also the founder of Gush Shalom, the peace bloc. This article appears at opednews.com. Here's the finish. Uri Avnery. Netanyahu spat in Obama's eye. The Republicans in the audience must have enjoyed that, perhaps some Democrats too. It can be assumed that Obama did not, so what will he do now? There's a Jewish joke about a hungry pauper who entered an inn and demanded food. Otherwise, he threatened, he would do what his father did. The frightened innkeeper fed him, and in the end asked timidly, but what did your father do? Swallowing the last morsel, the man answered, he went to sleep hungry. There's a good chance that Obama will do the same. He will pretend that the spittle on his cheek is rainwater. His promise to prevent a UN General Assembly recognition of the state of Palestine deprived him of his main leverage over Netanyahu. Somebody in Washington seems to be floating the idea of Obama coming to Jerusalem and addressing the Knesset. It would be direct retaliation. Obama talking with the Israeli public over the head of the prime minister, as Netanyahu has just addressed the American public over the head of the president. It would be an exciting event. As a former member of the Knesset, I would be invited, but I would not advise it. I proposed it a year ago. Today, I would not. Obama will, of course, be received politely, without the obsessive jumping up and down and clapping, though probably heckled by Knesset members of the extreme right, but that will be all. He will not shake Israeli public opinion unless he comes with a concrete plan of action, a detailed peace plan with a detailed timetable backed by a clear determination to see it through, whatever the political cost. Another nice speech, however beautifully phrased, just will not do. After this week's deluge of speeches, we have had enough. Speeches can be important if they accompany actions, but they are no substitute for action. Churchill's speeches helped to shape history, but only because they reflected historic deeds. Without the Battle of Britain, without Normandy, without El Alamein, those speeches would have sounded ridiculous. Now, with all the roads blocked, only one path remains open. The recognition of the state of Palestine by the United Nations, coupled with nonviolent mass action by the Palestinian people against the occupation. The Israeli peace forces will also play their part, because the fate of Israel depends on peace as much as the fate of Palestine. Sure, the U.S. will try to obstruct, and Congress will jump up and down, but the Israeli-Palestinian spring is on the way. Uri Avnery writing, and this is, you can find it at Op-Ed News. If anyone has the authority to speak on this issue, it would be Uri Avnery, the woman who tried to protest Netanyahu's phony-ass speech in the U.S. Congress the other day, was jumped, beaten, floored, and taken to a hospital and ultimately arrested. She, too, is Jewish, as is Medea Benjamin, the founder of Code Pink, as is Amy Goodman, Democracy Now!, where so much of this reporting is occurring. You will not find it in mainstream television media. You will not find it there. But it's good to know that someone as active in the peace movement for the past 60 years, as is Uri Avnery, was as offended as I was, and maybe you were, at seeing these goddamn clowns in the U.S. Congress jumping up and down because a murderous Likudnik is standing in front of them talking about what he will not allow. Addressing the legislative body of the United States less than 24 hours after the President of the United States suggested as a starting point a consideration of the 1967 borders accompanied with swaps, land swaps, security guarantees, peace agreements. But as Uri Avnery pointed out, if there is a member of the U.S. Congress, House or Senate, who has the courage to tell the Israeli lobby to kiss off, to go away, to grow up, to stop buying the U.S. Congress. If there is one who would do that, he has yet, or she has yet, to present herself or himself. they dare not. But that jumping up and down, what did Audrey call it? Like yo-yos, up and down, up and down, up and down. Well, Netanyahu stood up there and worked them like the carnival barker he is. Disgusting. Sickening. Now, when we come back, a couple of emails. I'll limit it to two. That I received, because once again, I have the absolute temerity to challenge and question and condemn what the Israelis have been doing to the Palestinians for 60 years. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. People read Orwell's 1984 and view it as a warning. Right-wing psychopaths read Orwell's 1984 and view it as a political guidebook for obtaining political power. Joe in Temecula, California is our sponsor this hour. Thank you, Joe. Okay, continuing... And if you don't want to hear this, okay, I understand. You can flip your radio dial if that's what you want to do. We had a Likudnik come to this country. Someone whose political party, Likud Party, is a direct descendant of terrorist organizations back in the 40s, late 40s, who blew things up and murdered people, Palestinians, British, in order to make their political point, in order to establish the sovereignty of what they saw as what was going to be their country. And through several metamorphoses, this Likud party came into existence. Netanyahu is the head of Likud by virtue of the fact that he is the prime minister and he is a member of that party. The Likud party controls about 27% of the Knesset, I think. So Likud operates with a very fragile coalition made up of extreme right-wingers who want nothing to do with Palestinians. Nothing. So he comes to this country, Netanyahu, has a meeting with Barack Obama. In that meeting, Obama says to his face that the peace agreement that will never come between Israel and the Palestinians should begin with discussions and the consideration of a return to the 1967 borders. If you don't know what those borders were and why they were erased, you need to do some reading on your own. Netanyahu said to Obama's face, if I remember the little impromptu press briefing they had, that such a return would never happen. Because in Israel's consideration, the 1967 borders are indefensible. But then, Netanyahu is invited to address a joint session of Congress, the United States Congress, where he immediately starts disrespecting Obama like a typical Republican would. And boy, didn't they love it. And as Uri Avdery pointed out in the article, the lengthy article published at Gush Shalom website and carried by Op-Ed News online, as Uri Avdery pointed out, these yo-yos in the U.S. Congress, up and down, up and down, up and down, applauding just about everything Netanyahu had to say. The fact that the U.S. Congress is so willing to continue U.S. foreign policy that has resulted in bloodshed, wars, attacks on this country, to continue a policy that is 100% one-sided. Who's asking for what here? There's never been a suggestion on this program or any program that I'm aware of except the right-wing nutballs. The real anti-Semites. There's never been a suggestion that Israel should not exist. Although, as far as I know, it's the only state that claims a right to exist. Okay. That's never been the suggestion on this program, that Israel should not exist. What I've talked about for 20 years, ever since the original or the first Intifada back in the mid-80s, has been simply the recognition of the rights of the Palestinians and the recognition that in so many instances the Israelis have treated the Palestinians exactly the way the Nazis treated the Jews in Germany, Poland, Czechoslovakia, Austria, Hungary, in the run-up to and during the Hitler wars. But God forbid you should mention it on this program or any program. The Israeli lobby will immediately climb down your throat if you do talk radio or any kind of media work and suggest that there should be an equivalency of political rights between the Palestinians and the Israeli Jews who have come from all over the world, lately mostly from Russia, to establish their country. God forbid you should even bring it up. From Dave in Orange County, California. Mike, you crossed a line tonight, he's referring to last night, that I never expected from you. You protest again and again that you are not anti-Semitic. I believe you. At least I did until you let slip a comment on this evening's program. You made a point about Eric Cantor's refusal to provide disaster relief without a spending cut. You feigned his speech and said something like, "You goyim in the Midwest won't get a thing." I am a Jew, and as I said in my subject line, I have been a loyal Malloy listener for a long, long time. But this comment would indicate that you do, in fact, harbor some deep-seated disdain for Jews. Using the Yiddish term for non-Jewish people in this context makes it clear that you, on some level, believe the Jews are A, miserly, and B, have no concern for non-Jews. Intellectually, I'm sure you know these are, I think he meant to say not the case. He says these are the case. These are not the case, but this slip revealed something deeper, it would seem. There was no reason to link Judaism with Cantor's reprehensible politics. I expect you to apologize for the slight. It was mean-spirited and an uncalled-for affirmation of vile stereotypes. Dave, and his last name in Orange County, California. I wrote back, "Oh, please. I also use language associated with Irish, Italian, African-American, Russian, and on and on and on, weirdos. Cantor happens to be a Jewish weirdo. It was not a slip. I don't make slips. It was deliberate and pointed. Your asinine conclusions. That using the Yiddish term for non-Jewish people in this context makes it clear, as you said in your letter, that I, on some level, believe the Jews are miserly and have no concern for non-Jews. Your asinine conclusion indicates to me a deep-seated sense of superiority and a choking arrogance. If you're going to send critical emails, at the very least, try to curb the condescending attitude. Vile stereotypes? Such a nasty accusation, really. And then I get this back from Dave. Mike, thanks for responding. My point is that in this context and situation, there is no causality between being Jewish and denying help to suffering people. Quite the opposite is true for real Jews. The causality here is being a right-wing ass blank of any so-called religion. Had you been talking about Cantor in the context of the pro-Israel lobby and, say, fundraising for Israel, I would have smiled at your use of the word goyim. This upset me because it implied, pretty specifically it seemed, that Jewishness was at the root of withholding money from disaster victims. Tain't so, McGee. We'll be right back. I've never seen you fall so hard.
Scream, you suppress, embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
Oh, that sounded nice. 21 past the hour. If you're listening online, anywhere on earth, the music that we're playing tonight is from a band, Primetime Heroes. Go to their website, check it out. I really like this music. And I'd like you to just take a look at them. PrimetimeHeroes.com. All right, back to this letter. From Dave, he goes on, not a single Jew I have ever met would have used the word goyim in the context you assign to this so-called Jew, Eric Cantor. This disconnect is part of what rattled me. And as I'm sure you know, there are plenty of Jews in the Midwest. My parents are from Kansas City, so goyim wouldn't even apply any more than anywhere else. It came across as gratuitous. As far as my quote, sense of superiority and a choking arrogance, end quote. I'm sure you understand that anyone raised as a Jew is going to react when Jews are singled out in the media and blamed unjustly for societal ills. Did I do all that by using the word goyim? Oh, my God. I don't think Jews are superior or chosen, but please don't lose sight of the indisputable fact that Jews are targeted by the haters, and when I hear anything false or misleading that could feed those flames, I must speak up. I don't just give lip service to Pastor Niemöller. I didn't really expect you to apologize. I know it's not the way you roll. Your personal attacks on me were sad, but that's just you. We listeners take the good with the not so good. As I said, I do appreciate that you responded. I remain a regular listener. Dave. Okay. And then there was this. Dear Mr. Malloy, this is from Neil. I have been a pretty faithful listener and have enjoyed your search for truth and justice for the downtrodden and calling out the party of no. But last night's show was a bit of a shocker. Let me explain. I am a supporter of a two-state solution, as the Palestinians should have their own land to call home. Being a Jew, I understand Israel's fears. From 1948 on, they have been vilified, demonized. There are the Holocaust deniers, and I can go on. Seven wars against Israel, two intifadas, to name just a few. Of course, we may ask the question why the Jews would place themselves in harm's way. Where could they go? Europe? America? South America? Oh, no. Only fleeing Nazis go there. Perhaps Antarctica? The Jews went to the birthplace of their religion, where, of course, they were welcomed with open arms. Let me reiterate, I do not condone acts of violence, denial of rights, and basic human needs by any government entity, ours included. Israel fears for its safety and survival from hostile nations. They want to drive every Jew into the sea. Then there are the other brokers of peace in the Middle East, Saudi Arabia, Lebanon, Iraq under Saddam Hussein, the present government of Iraq, Hamas, and let us not leave out that scion of democracy and understanding, Iran, and their insane president, Ahmadinejad. Of course, let us look to the other brokers of peace, Russia, China, etc. The Palestinians are not without blood on their hands, suicide bombings, the murder of innocent children, women, and men. There are 25 incidents a year of honor killings within the Palestinian community. Yes, Israel has retaliated, ending in the killing of innocent children, women, and men. I do not condone these acts either. Is it any wonder Israel looks for friends wherever they can find them? They go to great lengths to seek out support for which they can, any which way they can. I know you, me, and others would do the same if our families were threatened. As to lobbies, I can't stand them on any level from any entity or government. That includes Israel. And I do not condone, as they work for interests other than the American people. And here's that word again. But the Saudis, United Arab Emirates, both shining examples of democracy, have lobbyists for their interests. Where is your outrage? The fault does not lie with the messengers, but rather with our elected representatives and their greed. As to so many Christian friends of Israel who see that region as the beginning of Christendom and the end, not very hopeful, is it? Nuclear weapons, there shouldn't be any. No further comment. Some people who call your show would bash Israel and Jews, even if there was no conflict. Right here, right now, there is something calling out. There is someone calling out, goddamn Jew, the detestable N-word, gay bashing, and more. I will remain a faithful listener and will continue to defend your right to free speech. But, sorry for that word again, there is always more than one side to any story, so just don't let your fervor get in the way. My response is pretty wordy, so if you summarize without omitting my sentiment, I will understand. And lastly, forgive my non-eloquence in stating same. Best regards, Neil S. I'm not exactly sure what Neil S. is talking about when you say last night's show was a bit of a shocker. Except to go to my default position, which is, no matter how I have tried to present fairly what used to be called, quaintly, the plight of the Palestinian people. That's what it was called 25 years ago. In my consciousness, I'm sure it was called that 60 years ago. No matter how I've tried to present that, I will usually generate this kind of response, where the first emailer was very offended by my use of the word goyim in referencing Eric Cantor's statement that the people in the Midwest who suffered tornadic damage and death and destruction can piss off, my term, unless cuts are made someplace else. And then the second letter writer, who I'm not sure exactly what his complaint was, but I'm used to this. I just thought this time I would just read the letters and let it go at that, which is what I'm doing right now. Oh, on the other hand, has Eric Cantor ever said that military and economic assistance to Israel has to be offset by cuts elsewhere?
It's Mike Malloy.
Hey, this hour is sponsored by Joe in Temecula, California. who writes, sane people read Orwell's 1984 and view it as a warning. Right-wing psychopaths read Orwell's 1984 and view it as a political guidebook for obtaining political power. Talking about crazy Republicans, I mentioned the other night Rob Woodall, who is a freshman. He's a Georgia Republican, and he held a town hall meeting in his district, and he made national news because of comments he made, which were on video, everybody's seen it, to a retired woman, a constituent who told him her company does not provide retiree benefits. And this punk, Woodall, said to the woman, "Hear yourself, ma'am. Hear yourself. You want the government to take care of you because your employer decided not to take care of you? My question is, when do I decide I'm going to take care of me? That should be your question, too." The exchange continued. In video provided to Huffington Post by another constituent, Woodall was asked why, if he believes in such self-reliance, why doesn't he forego his government health care plan? The constituent in this new video, and it's worth seeing, the woman says, "I have a question about taking care of you. You have government-subsidized health care, but you're not obligated to take that if you don't want to. Why aren't you going out on the fee market in the state where you're a resident and buy your own health care? Be an example." So this punk-ass Woodall responds this way. "Your question is, my government's willing to give me lots and lots of stuff for free, and why don't I take it?" The woman responded, "Why aren't you leading by example? And go get it in a single subscriber plan like you want everybody else to have. Because you want to end employer-sponsored health plans and government-sponsored health plans. You said so in a letter to me that your goal is to get rid of the employer-sponsored health care system. So why aren't you leading by example and go out yourself, decline the government health care plan, and go to Blue Cross or Blue Shield or whoever and get one for yourself and see how tough it is? You don't have any pre-existing conditions, I guess. You haven't had any life-threatening illnesses like I had last year." And then Woodall responded by saying, "This is why it's good to have these discussions, because there's some bad information out there." But the woman keeps going. "Answer the question. Why haven't you gone out and got it?" Woodall answers, "Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I did. It's because it's free. It's because it's free. The same reason I went to Walgreens and bought Activon, and I don't have any arthritis pain. Because it's free. Folks, if you give people things for free, don't blame them for taking them." What? Free? You rancid son of a bitch. Your health insurance, it may be free to you, but it's not free to me. I pay for it! And what the hell is he talking about? "I went to Walgreens and bought Activon, and I don't have any arthritis pain because it's free." What the hell does that mean? I hate these people. On Tuesday, Senator Chuck Schumer, Democrat of New York, one of the yo-yos that Uri Abneri was referring to a minute ago, Chuck Schumer responded to the Woodall video by telling the Washington Post that this punk, this half-witted jerk, Rob Woodall, lays bare the GOP approach to health care. Schumer said, quote, "No matter how hard you've worked your whole life, no matter how severe your medical hardship, the Republican motto is clear. You're on your own." This lays bare the ideology behind their goal of ending Medicare as we know it, end quote. So this punk from Georgia, Woodall, is committed to accepting coverage as long as taxpayers provide it. He calls it free. So Huffington Post asked him whether he thinks members of Congress should not get health care benefits as a matter of policy. In an email response to Huffington Post, he said, "Absolutely. Federal health care options in Congress should mirror those offered in the private sector. If these options are not available in the private sector, then folks working for the federal government should not have them either. There are bills being discussed to raise the amount that members of Congress pay into their benefits, and I support these pieces of legislation. You might also be interested to know, if you watched the entire town hall video, you would have heard this as well, that I chose the cheapest health care plan available to members of Congress, meaning that this is the plan in which the least amount of taxpayer money will be on the line for my health benefits." I mean, isn't that typically right-wing? That sounds like Neil Bortz, doesn't it? Isn't that typically right-wing Republican? There you go. I want it, but you can't have it. I get it, but you're not allowed. I get the tax breaks. You can kiss my ass. You can't have health insurance sponsored by your employer or retirement plan or the government, but I can. When asked what he would say to a person 54 years old or under right now who doesn't have a private or government retirement health care plan and is left to search the market with a voucher covering only a portion of costs. You know, that's Paul Ryan's Medicare plan. Woodall said this, quote, "The House passed fiscal year 2012 budget resolution does two very important things. It ensures that seniors 55 and older will continue to receive the same Medicare benefits they received in 2010. And it ensures Medicare for individuals under age 55 by saving Medicare from insolvency and providing for the first time a real choice for the future." Which is a lie. This guy ought to go to work for Benjamin Netanyahu. This is a lie. This is what the Republicans said during the run-up to the 2010 election. Well, the Democrats want to kill Medicare. We're going to save it. Now, the Democratic Party, Michael Moore on The Last Word the other day on MSNBC put it fairly succinctly. The Democrats should push this just unremittingly, relentlessly. Push this idea. Don't let these filthy-ass Republican corporate cockroaches frame the issue. The Democrats do not want to tamper with Medicare. And as Michael Moore said, any Democrat that says everything is on the table deserves to be defeated because everything is not on the table. Social Security and Medicare are not on the table. What should be on the table, so to speak, are tax increases for these wealthy pigs who pay nothing and corporate tax enforcement for the corporations like the oil companies who pay nothing, who get government money. They get it. Taxpayer money. Slime balls. Activon? What the hell is this freak talking about? Activon? You know, I said during the run-up to the 2010 election, go ahead and vote Republican, you dumbasses. Go ahead. Go ahead. All you right-wingers, you birther freaks, you people who can't stand a black man in the White House. After all, it is called the White House, right? Go ahead. Do it. Cut your own throats. And then stand there and watch while you bleed to death, you stupid. What did I read that more than 60% of people over the age of 60 voted Republican during the congressional elections? Are you kidding me? Okay. If that's how you feel, then continue. Go ahead and continue to do it. Buy this filthy, lying meme about balancing the budget. You don't know what balancing the budget means on a federal level. It doesn't mean anything. But go ahead, dumbasses. Continue to do it. Continue to vote Republican while the noose around your neck tightens more and more. And when the time comes that Paul Ryan's little game of vouchers, instead of Medicare, that you can then, while you're anticipating your heart bypass operation, you can go shop around. While your chest is killing you and you can't breathe and it's hard to walk because you've got three coronary arteries that are 98% occluded and you're going to take your goddamn voucher, right? And you're going to go, what are you going to do? Go online? and you look at the screen and the words start to swim and you faint yet again because your brain isn't getting enough oxygen. But go ahead. Do it. Look for your voucher. And when your adult children show up and your ass is dead, maybe they will turn around and say, well, you know, Paul Ryan was right. I never liked Mom anyway. I think I'll vote Republican for the rest of my life. Ha 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 ha. You sick freaks. We'll be right back. Ah.
Seas would rise when I gave the word. Now in the morning I sleep alone. Sweep the streets I used to own. I used to roll the dice. Feel the fear in my enemy's eyes. Listen as the crowd would sing. Now the old king's dead. Long live the king. One minute I held the key.
The time.
To practice your synchronized screaming, it's Mike Malloy.
Yo, top of the crown, the queen of fatal mistake, and your cradle can't shake the dream.
Ten before the hour, this hour is sponsored by Joe in Temecula, California, who says, sane people read Orwell's 1984 and view it as a warning. Right-wing psychopaths read Orwell's 1984 and view it as a political guidebook for obtaining political power. And by the way, credit where credit's due, that very well-thought-out line, has Eric Cantor ever said that military and economic aid to Israel has to be offset by cuts elsewhere? Comes from Michael in Roswell. I'd like to take credit for it, but that would be plagiarism, wouldn't it? Thanks, Joe in Temecula, California. Mitt Romney. What a little toadhead this guy is, huh? Mitt Romney, who, you know, Obama's or the Democratic Party's, what was left after Obama showed his cowardice and the Democratic leadership showed their uselessness. What was left in the health care reform plan was all Mitt Romney stuff from Massachusetts. It's all Mitt Romney. And Mitt Romney, of course, has been running like a crazy person, trying to run away from his own state's health care plan. And now, the recovery of the American auto industry, as you know, Chrysler wrote a check, when was it, earlier this week, repaying $5.1 billion to the United States Treasury. And whether you like it or not, whether I like it or not, Obama and his Democratic allies claimed credit for saving the auto industry in Michigan. Now, there are other factors involved here, of course. Union contracts have been pretty much hacked to pieces. The horrible tragedy in Japan that has resulted in a terrible lack of parts in the Japanese auto industry. A lack of leadership, guidance. Japan is reeling. Japan may disappear. So there's lots of things at play here. But Mitt Romney, back in 2009, Romney said Obama's plans for rescuing the auto industry were tragic and a very sad circumstance for this country. And yet, in the 2010 elections, people in Michigan voted Republican. This is what I'm talking about. What in the hell is wrong with you people? Republicans are going to cut your throats and giggle while you bleed. But that's all right. Go ahead and do it. Now, Romney, where was it? The National Democratic or the Democratic National Committee yesterday released a YouTube video highlighting a 2008 opinion article by Mitt Romney in the New York Times entitled, it was written by Mitt Romney, it was entitled "Let Detroit Go Bankrupt." In the video, Romney is shown saying, "If you write a check, they're going to go out of business." And then in 2009, Romney said Obama's plans for rescuing the auto industry were tragic, very sad circumstance, blah, 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 blah. Yesterday, a Romney spokesman said that Obama's plan for rescuing Detroit was modeled after one of Mr. Romney plans that he advocated in 2008. Eric Femstrom, a Romney spokesman, said, quote, "Mitt Romney had the idea first. You have to acknowledge that. He was advocating for a couple of actions that eventually the Obama administration adopted. He did, he did. He really, really did. Mitt Romney had the idea first. He really, really did. Mitt Romney argued instead of a bailout, we should let the car companies go through a restructuring under the bankruptcy laws and then bail them out." Spokesman for the DNC said Mitt Romney must think that the entire country has fallen into a state of amnesia if he believes he can get away with this revisionist history. The record is clear. Mitt Romney would have let GM and Chrysler go bankrupt without extending them a dime of federal assistance. Romney argued instead of a bailout, we should let the car companies go through a restructuring under the bankruptcy laws. Blah, 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 blah. Jennifer Granholm, the former Democratic governor of Michigan, said, quote, "Mitt Romney is doing circus-like contortions to get out from under the damaging words he uttered in 2008. But this is what Republicans do. All Republicans, especially Republican office holders, Republican voters do the same thing. They lie, they cheat, they steal, and they're sneaks, in addition to being cowards. They will do anything to avoid responsibility. And they do, so many of them do it because, well, you know, they're Christian. And as long as they go to bed at night and say their little prayers, they're absolved of all the damage they did during the day. And if they're Catholic, they can go to confession every Wednesday night and go, hamana, 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 hamana. And the priest gives them all kinds of things to say. And then they're free and clear. And they can start all over again. And if they're on their deathbeds and they have enough breath left in them, they can say, Jesus, forgive me. I accept you. I'm so sad. I accept you, Jesus. Boom. And then they get into heaven. That's why every Republican is a liar, a cheat, a sneak, a thief, and a coward. But especially Republican office holders or Republican wannabe office holders like Mitt Romney, Sarah Palin, Newt Gingrich. But wait a minute, that's too heavy a burden for Newt Gingrich. Newt Gingrich is just a wealthy adulterer who likes to drape his girlfriend slash wife in lots and lots and lots of bling. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy Program. Bidaboo, bidabum. Yeah, I know you're getting tired of this, but I frankly don't care. You know, the reason I talk about the Israeli-Palestinian issue so much is, first and foremost, U.S. foreign policy is based, if not solely, certainly to a large extent, on the basis of how is this going to affect Israel. If it is going to affect Israel in a negative way, then we will not do it. If it is going to affect Israel in a positive way, then we will. And, of course, this kind of one-sided attitude has gotten the United States into the horrific situation it is in, where it concerns the Arab world, the Muslim world, I should say, the Arab-speaking world, for sure, but the Muslim world. I mean, how do you tell 200 million people in the Middle East that they don't count? Where it concerns the Israeli-Palestinian issue A and B, or maybe this is A, you support murderous dictatorial regimes like the one that was in Egypt or Saudi Arabia or pick a country. You support these regimes if you are the United States foreign policy deciders. While the Arab street, I believe the phrase is, suffers. So on the one hand, U.S. foreign policy, based on the sanctity of the state of Israel and keeping the spigots open where it concerns oil. Those two policies together are the policies that have put us in the situation that we're in so many instances. So why not solve them? why not solve them? Jimmy Carter put solar panels on the White House. Ronald Reagan came in and tore them down. That was a nice gesture. 30 years ago, we had a chance. You know, when Carter sat there with his morose speech, that's how it's been defined, the meme, the what was the term that was used that he never used? The, I forget what the term is. But anyway, Carter was just busted by the right wing, by corporate America, and as a result, he was a one-term president. There was a Christian evangelical, the only one, the only one who ever sought and got public office. Jimmy Carter was a true Christian evangelical. And, of course, Israel has identified him now as right up there with other people they identify as terrorists, because Carter, in a book, referred to the policies of the Israeli government as the same as the policies of South Africa, in other words, apartheid. But it was Carter, I digress, it was Carter who tried to set the United States on a path to free itself from Middle Eastern oil. Those two elements, Middle Eastern oil and our support of the tyrants, the dictators, the sons of bitches, the royal families, the real killers, we don't care. We don't care how many Arabs are killed as long as we get the oil. We don't care. We don't care how many human rights, civil rights, any kind of rights are denied to the Arab street. We don't care. A, B, or is it A, Israel? So, you know, you have this massive population, 200,000, I'm sorry, 200, yeah, well, how many is it? 200 million? 200 million Arabs and a billion Muslims. And they look at the policies of the United States, what do they see? Well, you've got eyes. You know what they see? They see the same thing that you see, only you're not allowed to see it because you're an American, and your elected representative is a yo-yo. Benjamin Netanyahu comes to speak up and down, applause, applause, up and down, yay, yay, hoop-de-doo. Zippy Livni is the opposition leader in Israel. She said a couple of days ago that Israel must adopt the vision of a two-state solution. And she went to Washington to address this AIPAC conference. And she said that was the only way to preserve Israel's status as the Jewish homeland. She said, Inaction is not an option to the stalled peace process. She told the conference the day after Obama delivered his own address to the pro-Israel lobby, clarifying his vision for a Palestinian state within the 1967 borders with land swaps, which was immediately rejected by Netanyahu and his coalition allies and jumped on by every single filthy Republican member of the House and the Senate and a hell of a lot of Democrats. Oh, no, Mr. President. There shall be no equality under the law. Not like that. Zippy Livni said that she had decided to come to the conference, quote, not to ask what the U.S. can do for Israel, but what we can do together to confront the challenges. She said if Israel did not take a step to lead the peace process, it would inevitably be led. Israel should welcome the sentiment of hope accompanying the changes that have swept the Middle East. But she warned that as Zionists, quote, we can't only hope, we can't remain indifferent to this battle that will shape our future, end quote. Two dramatic decisions must be made to implement the vision of Israel and Palestine existing. First, the state of Israel should be as a Jewish homeland based on a meaningful and practical education that is not, quote, given away to the ultra-Orthodox parties, end quote. The second decision Israel must make, said Zippy Livni, is to adopt the two-state solution, which she declared would not be a favor to the U.S. president or anyone else. It is not an anti-Israeli policy, a two-state solution. It is vital for Israel's interests. She said, if we don't shape our future, others will do it for us. Now, Zippy Livni is a Zionist by her own definition. She's not some peacenik. But she is a realist where it concerns the situation in Israel, which Benjamin Netanyahu is not, which every single filthy Republican in the U.S. House and Senate is not, which probably 95% of the Democrats in the House and the Senate are not. They are not realists. They like the money that flows to them from their various patrons, among whom is the State of Israel, the AIPAC organization, the oil industry, the energy industry, the tobacco industry, the insurance industry, the banking industry, the financial services industry. That's who the Republicans represent. And not a few Democrats, maybe all of them. But where it concerns Israel and the Palestinians, you know, there's a couple of clear choices, and it's heading to some sort of conclusion. It will either be a peaceful conclusion, or it will be a cataclysm that will be stunning. Israel possesses hundreds of nuclear weapons, and if that state feels that its existence is challenged to the point where an invasion is imminent, it will use the nuclear weapons. Now, consider for a moment nuclear weapons going off, if that's the right term, in the Middle East. Think about it during the commercial break.
Shots.
is the outrage. Oh, here it is. Back to Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. It is Wednesday night. This is supposed to be church. I guess we're doing, in an offhand way, we're talking a religion of sorts. Bob Alexander sent this to me. This is an excerpt from the book Divinity of Doubt. I like this. This is from chapter 19. The author writes, I can say with relative confidence that there's only one necessary religion that has any merit to the people who inhabit this earth, and that's the golden rule. Do unto others what you would want them to do unto you. To treat others as you would want them to treat you is the highest, most noble form of human behavior and the basis of all morality. No matter what some papal encyclical says, no matter what some bishop's conference says, no matter how many sacraments of the Catholic Church there are, or chapters and verses in the Bible, or thick and complex books by theologians, or Sunday school classes and sermons by pastors, no matter how many heated arguments there are about God, Jesus, and religion, no matter how many pilgrimages there are to Mecca, Jerusalem, and other holy places, no matter how many thousands of hours Jewish scholars struggle over the meaning of Torah, no matter how many multi-million dollar churches and synagogues and grand cathedrals to Christ are constructed, nothing can ever change that simple reality. Abraham Lincoln said, when I do good, I feel good. When I do bad, I feel bad. That's my religion. What can any church, religion, priest, minister, rabbi, theologian, seminary, religious book, or college course teach you beyond the golden rule that has any value? Anything else has to be man-made piffle. If we must have religion, the seminal test as to the value and merit of any religious religion worth its salt has to be not what you believe, but what you do. That is how you treat your fellow man. Yet in the thousands upon thousands of books and billions upon billions of words that have been written, particularly about Christianity and the Bible, what percentage of these books do you think are devoted to the only thing that counts, the golden rule? The second reality is that if there is a God and a heaven after our life on earth, no God who demands of those whom he created that in order to get to heaven, they do something here on earth different from leading a life of the golden rule is worth spending 1 second in heaven with, much less eternity. If his main requirement for getting to heaven is not that we treat our fellow man fairly and decently, but we be born again Christians who accept Jesus as our Savior and that we love him more than anyone else with all of our being, then as indicated earlier, who in the hell would want to spend eternity or even 1 second with someone who is so unbelievably self-centered and vainglorious? That type of God is not worth a tinker's damn. From the Divinity of Doubt. I've always been told, though, that a tinker's dam, the dam is not spelled D-A-M-N, it's D-A-M, as in a dam, you know, something that blocks up the flow of something else. Tinker being a silversmith. That's what I've been told. I have no idea. This has certainly been a... by the way, the Paul Ryan budget proposal was voted down by the Senate. I think it was today. There was a vote today designed to put Republicans on record backing the controversial House budget plan. The measure failed 57-40 with 5 Republicans breaking ranks and voted no. Lisa Murkowski, Rand Paul, of course, Scott Brown, Olympia Snow, and Susan Collins. Rand Paul, huh? The plan, crafted by Paul Ryan, would turn Medicare into a private program and transform Medicaid into a state block grant system. Just before the vote today, Majority Leader Harry Reid took to the floor to portray the Republican budget in stark terms. He said, quote, The Republican plan to kill Medicare is a plan to make the rich richer and the sick sicker. Republican plan to kill Medicare was a phrase that he used repeatedly. He said last night, the people of America resoundingly spoke in rejecting the Republican plan to end Medicare as we know it. And so on and so forth. So Paul Ryan's little wet dream died in the Senate, but they will try again. And I think they should. I think the Republicans should continue. You know, while morons like this jerk that represents one of the districts here in Georgia, like he said, well, the reason I take government health care is because it's free. That's the kind of gross ignorance that competes with the cowardice of Republicans.
Life's too short to listen to right-wing radio. Here's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. It never fails to amaze me how, no matter how closely I look, to see if there's anything that can be attributed to right-wingers, to Republicans, to conservatives, anything that could be identified as progressive or really for the benefit of the American people, I always come up empty. Always. And I put the challenge out several months ago, and I do this every once in a while. The challenge stands: if any right-winger, you know, instead of sending me your tacky little emails about how I'm a communist and all this other crap, which I'm not, I'm a market socialist, but, you know, you don't know the difference. So instead of doing that, why not send me an email that lays out very clearly and run it through spell check before you send it so I can read the damn thing. You people don't know how to use, not only do you not know how to spell, you are very seriously grammatically challenged. But anyway, send me something. Anything, any piece of legislation, plan, idea that actually was designed or passed into law to benefit everybody in the country. Rather than what you bastards usually do, which is devise pieces of legislation that hurts everybody in the country, but rewards your masters. The corporatists, the capitalists who just continue to beat you into the ground and you continue to say, more please, may I have more, sir? But the challenge is there. And of course, I know how the challenge will be answered. It will not be. To show you how crazy people are in this country, there are some conspiracy websites claiming that the shootings that nearly killed Gabrielle Giffords and did end the lives of a federal judge and a 9-year-old girl and 4 others, that shooting never took place. One of the particularly bizarre sites reported by the New York Times is run by a Texas man. He says it was all a government hoax and these were all actors. Jesus God. Richard Castigar, who is investigative chief of the Pima County Sheriff's Department, said he passed information about the website to his intelligence unit. He reacted angrily to those denying the shootings. The investigator said, quote, there were bodies sent to the morgue, people's loved ones, end quote. Spokesman for the FBI said the Bureau was aware of the site, but he declined to say whether an investigation was underway. Blah, 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 blah. One shooting victim said he notified the FBI recently after two men showed up at his Tucson home claiming to be investigators and saying they were trying to determine whether the shooting was a hoax. The victim, who asked not to be identified, said, quote, they tried to get into my house. They wanted to know if I had any pictures. They said they didn't believe the event took place, end quote. The victim said that when he pressed the visitors for identification, one of them presented a business card that listed the Texas conspiracy site, which describes the shootings as an exercise conducted by the Department of Homeland Security. Jesus Christ. Other people connected to the case, including hospital personnel, victims' relatives, and possible trial witnesses, have received similar visits or seen their images on this right-wing website. The site, which solicits donations from visitors to help with its, quote, investigation, end quote, shows pictures of people who appeared on television after the shooting, including the suspect, Joe Loeffner, and claims they resemble photographs of Tucson area actors found on the Internet. The site says, we are only trying to uncover the truth and give the information to the citizens. We would love nothing more than to debunk our own theory. Ed Chiarini, C-H-I-A-R-I-N-I, who runs the site, identifies himself as an inventor and web entrepreneur. Ed Chiarini. Oh, my God. So, of course, it's in Texas. Obviously, it's in Texas. Other than Austin, Texas. Texas is nothing but a sewer for this kind of stuff. Until they have a disaster like the whole goddamn state burns up, and then the governor of Texas, Rick Perry, pleads and whines and begs for federal assistance. And 2 weeks after he gets the check, he starts talking about secession again. Oh, by the way, Rick Perry signed a bill yesterday that would force Texas women who want an abortion to undergo an ultrasound, hear a detailed description of the fetus, and then wait a full 24 hours before getting the abortion that they are seeking. That is, Rick Perry is not any of his goddamn business. Mandatory sonograms. Have been introduced in 14 states so far this year. Arizona, Louisiana, Texas have already enacted ultrasound laws. Governor Rick Scott of Florida is expected to sign a similar proposal in the coming week. I mean, the balls of these people. It's astonishing. The Texas law requires doctors to tell a woman the size of her fetus's limbs and organs, even if she doesn't want to know. What do? Scream it at her? What if she puts her fingers in her ear and says, la, 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 la? What does the doctor do? What is the doctor forced to do? Wait until she takes her fingers out and then says, all right, now look, the fetal arm is 1.3 centimeters long. It's not fully formed. Matter of fact, calling it an arm is a stretch. But that's what you're about to rip into pieces if you get your abortion. You do understand that, don't you, woman? The law also forces physicians to make an image of the fetus and the sound of its heartbeat. Make the woman listen to it before she can undergo the abortion procedure. And Governor Rick Perry, who made the bill an emergency measure so he gets signed real quick, said yesterday that the law will, quote, ensure that every Texas woman seeking an abortion has all the facts about the life she is carrying and understands the devastating impact of such a life-changing decision, end quote. So women in Texas are too immature, too incompetent, probably a bunch of whores, right? Because that's the only people that get pregnant, right? Bunch of whores that are out there having sex and not staying home with their husbands where they belong. But Texas now considers all women to be ignorant, incompetent, and probably whores who need to be punished. This is Texas. Not only does it treat women like dirt, but it gets in the way of doctor-patient relationships. What is the Texas Medical Association doing about this? Well, what are the doctors in Dallas and Houston and Fort Worth and Austin and Corpus Christi and all over the place? What are you doctors saying? The state of Texas. Now, remember, these filthy goddamn Republican liars will tell you, oh, well, you know what? The government doesn't have any business in our private lives. If I want to own 50 goddamn guns, I will. If I want to say the N-word, I will. Oh, unless it's about these damn old women. You know why they want to have all this abortion stuff? So they can go out and have sex. You morons. But that's Texas. That's the reason that Texas is burning. I'm sorry, but y'all brought it on yourself. Your God has just gotten furiously pissed off at your behavior. So, you know, the flames may be receding a little bit now, but it's going to come back. It's going to come back. It's just going to burn Texas into a cinder. That's God's vengeance on y'all. That's right. No, that's not. Well, I'm just going by what another one of your psychopaths said. Falwell and Robertson and the rest of the, and Oral Roberts and Franklin Graham and the rest of the, Oral Roberts is dead. All these right-wing religious nutbags who always tell you that it's God's vengeance when San Francisco has an earthquake or New York has an attack engineered by the Bush crime family. Yeah, God dropped his veil of protection. Well, what's going on in Texas, boys? Let's raise your knock in Texas. Texas, won't you anyway? So won't you let me help you, mister? Just pull your hat down the way I do and buy your pants just a little longer. And next time somebody laughs at you, you just tell them you're not from Texas. That's right, you're not from Texas. That's right, you're not from Texas. That's right, you're not from Texas. Too, I didn't forget you. It's all a force of nature, he writes tonight. The Commodities Future Trading Commission, the CFTC, is charging two traders and the Swiss company they work for with rigging the oil futures market by controlling 85% of the available delivery contracts for the month of April 2008. They apparently did this not just from buying actual oil contracts, but by manipulating derivatives based on the oil market. This pushed oil over $147 a barrel back then. All the while, they were short selling the market to cash in when they dumped their holdings. Derivatives can be had for mere tenths of a penny on the dollar. And if you're willing to bet enough money all on one side, you can shift the entire market. This is why the CFTC opposed allowing the creation of derivatives in the first place. Now, in the end, I know that's kind of dense, but in the end, the two traders only made $50 million off their scheme, and the government, our government, wants $150 million in penalties. The real damage, of course, ran into the many billions. But the really big players get to keep that money because what they did doesn't count as a crime. You see, they're smart enough to make their crimes legal, or at least make sure the law isn't enforced. Now, if you would expect a criminal charge with a $150 million fine attached based on a crime that helped tank the entire world economy, if you expect that that would make the evening news, your expectations are to be dashed. Only the business pages covered it, and even that coverage was weighted heavily with the denials of wrongdoing. What, us? What? What? Obama's recent pledge to go after illegal oil trading was met with derisive remarks from the right and the left as nothing but empty political rhetoric, so of course there would be no reporting of this. After all, if the peasants hear about it, they might expect to see more. The aristocracy knows that once the blade is lifted on the guillotine, there is no turning back. The right has successfully indoctrinated most Americans with the notion that what markets do is a force of nature that you can no more resist than an F5 tornado. You can't do anything about the weather. That's why Republicans want to cut in half the funding for weather warnings. The Republicans introduced a bill today that would provide $1 billion in energy storm relief, but the bill requires a $1.5 billion cut in research for green energy. You see how that works? This is Eric Cantor. Global warming is a myth, you know. Rigged markets are a myth, too. And as long as we cut taxes on the rich, the weather will be just fine. If you lose your house to Wall Street, to a Wall Street bank, or to a global warming-driven storm, it was all just nature. And you should just pull yourself up by your bootstraps. You couldn't afford that house anyway on what your job pays now, if you have a job. Bruce Enberg writing his prairienumeral2.com. I wonder what kind of emails he gets. Yeah, I wonder. Oh. I guess there's not a whole lot left to talk about. What's this? The one member of Congress who did not attend Netanyahu's yo-yo affair was Rand Paul. Really? I guess tomorrow night we should talk about how John Boehner has been blasted by the child abusing leadership of his church, the Catholic Church. And Bill O'Reilly has stepped into the fray, stating that any religious leader or theologian who busts up on Boehner is not a real Christian. Is that what this is about? I'll have to take a look at this because. Oh, and just when you think Rand Paul might have done something good, you know, Rand Paul is the one that says universal health care is slavery. Yeah, he did. He said, with regard to the idea of whether or not you have a right to health care, you have to realize what that implies. I am a physician. You have the right to come to my house and conscript me. That's a little bit of a leap. But he goes on to say, it means you believe in slavery. You are going to enslave not only me, but the janitor at my hospital, the person who cleans my office, the assistants, the nurses. You are basically saying you believe in slavery. What? Universal health care is slavery? Well, Rand, you half-witted moron. Randall, you half-witted moron. Nobody says you have to treat a patient. If you don't want to treat them, don't. Just walk away. Go back to looking at internet porn or whatever you people do. Isn't that something that libertarians love to talk about? Slavery? Jesus, they're crazy. They're nuts. They're wacko. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.